Welcome once again to Word on the Hills with me, Felicity Sidnell-Reed, my co-host Gwyn Sheltimer, and our guest this week, crime novelist Robin Timmerman. Each week we visit with an author, editor, or sometimes a publisher who lives in or has connections to our area. We ask them to introduce us to their work, and we hope for a glimpse into their lives and to find out what prompts them to write. Then we invite them to read for us from their books. Welcome, Robin.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Robin Timmerman says she never wanted to be anything but a writer. However, like most authors, she's had many types of day jobs, including secretary, part-time journalist, mother and grandma, and for most of her working life, a painter-decorator with her husband in beautiful Prince Edward County. Oh, and her husband has a sideline too. He's a founder of the popular folk music comedy duo The Frere Brothers. Robin is a longtime environmental activist, starting with a Ban the Bomb march at 14 in the 60s, and conservationist, served 3 years on the Conservation Authority of Prince Edward County. She launched the Bee Friendly campaign in PEC and gets a special kick out of combining her concerns for the natural world with her stories. So, why did you want to write, Robin? What was your early inspiration?
Both of my parents were writers. Dad was a miner, his day job,
yes,
and an aspiring story writer who sadly died very young at 37. So Mom had been only the second woman reporter on the Kingston Whig Standard. After Dad died, she took the job of city editor on the Woodstock Sentinel Review, a pioneer in 1954. So our house was filled with young news reporters and talk of scoops and stories. I was always a great reader. My younger sister called me a worm book. Got that wrong. I liked all the greats, you know, Jane Eyre, Great Expectations. And The Heart is a Lonely Hunter by Carson McCullers. That's my idea of a perfectly written book, and you can only envy.
But what made you choose to write mystery novels?
Right. I've been writing all my life, I think. And then I took the Humber School course for writers. I've sent manuscripts to publishing houses and almost always got a response, so they didn't just throw it on a slush pile. It was encouraging. But it's kind of like always getting a B-plus for effort, and I wanted to write something that might sell. Recent statistics indicated that mystery stories are now the top-selling genres in all book sales. Previously, romance topped the charts. What does that say about our aging population? Anyway, Canadian mystery writers such as Maureen Jennings are so inspiring, becoming world famous as their stories are made into movies and television series. There's such a large readership now. People are gobbling up mystery stories. So even the big stars take a year to write a book, but people can read through your entire oeuvre in a week. So there's lots of room for the rest of us. I'm a member of Crime Writers of Canada, which does an incredible job of promoting Canadian mystery authors. They're a lot of fun, too. Murder mystery writing is a lot of fun.
So tell us about your protagonists in this series. The whole series deals with the same two people.
Yes,
right?
It's a couple, yeah. And their lives advance as well. Mm-hmm. Well, much as I enjoy the British police procedurals featuring a thrice-divorced, world-weary, recovering alcoholic detective, I had purposely chose to write about a younger couple. Former soldier Pete Jakes and his Turkish-born wife, Ali. Pete's last posting was in Afghanistan, but after a serious brush with a roadside explosive, he decided to switch careers and look for peace as a policeman in rural Ontario. Unfortunately, this being a murder mystery series, the Jakes find anything but. A special joy of writing is meeting and getting to know these people that you have created. Each time I begin a new book, I'm looking forward to checking in on everybody and seeing what they're up to.
Where did they come from first? How do they walk into your mind?
They seem
such an unlikely couple.
A lot of writing isn't planned. It's in your head, I guess. So
yeah.
I do love Prince Edward County, and I had come from away, so I think I wanted a person who's discovered it and from away, and what that person might be seeking, who could need something lovely like that more than a soldier who'd be, I don't know. I guess that's, except that I wanted a younger couple.
Yeah. Well, before we go back to the official questions, how about Just tell us how he met Ali.
Yes, it might be in something that I read, but he was a soldier over there, and she was working on teaching under a United Nations project.
You're a long-time environmental activist, so did this influence you when you were developing the plot of your first novel?
Pity of the Winds, yes. I started writing Pity of the Winds partly to deal with my emotions about the rift in my community over the wind turbine situation. The people in my story would have pulled together in the face of a natural disaster, such as a flood or a tornado, yet they were caught up in an issue so divisive it threatened to tear the fabric of the community apart. So this was what was going on in my mind, and I'm a writer, and it certainly seemed like a natural possibility for a murder. So, and my stories are not cozy, but not grim or horrific, so, and I enjoy writing the characters, so it was great to escape into fiction for that issue. Readers felt I was even-handed about the issue. At least I never received any criticism from either side. And it's the backdrop to a story, of course, as well, right? Mm-hmm. Though I'm sure anybody reading Winds would see my concern for the wild habitat that would be affected. I feature wild creatures in all the books, Hawks in Winds, Wild Turkey in the next one, Cormorants and Crimes of Summer. When you're asking about my environmental feelings, at one point in Crimes of Summer, a character voices my own thought that the people who talk of culling the birds because their guano has ruined a couple of islands in Lake Ontario only have to take a boat trip around the lake to see what 10 million people have done to the shoreline. I tend to side with the birds. Yeah. And then there's a peregrine falcon in autumn and a snapping turtle in the most recent book, Out of the Running. So they're just sort of little sidelines. But
how about you read to us from The Pity of the Winds?
There's been some vandalism, some trouble around this proposed wind turbine site. Sort of an ugly dummy hanging there with red paint all over it. The officer is investigating it, and one of the ladies he's investigating is Miranda Paris, a 70-year-old lady who lives in a farmhouse. So, Miranda Paris said the name on the mailbox. The witch across the road. The house was of a similar vintage and style to his own. A two-story clapboard with some gingerbread woodwork on the gables. The chickens were out in the yard, about 20 vari-colored birds pecking in the dirt. He'd have to push his way through. He felt like a fool. He'd called "Hello, Mrs. Paris" 3 times now, and she must know he was there. He could hear the dog barking in the house. What if the old girl simply refused to answer? But no, the door was opening. The way things were going, the animal would be an attack Doberman. He braced himself and tried to look authoritative, but the dog didn't look too bad, and curious rather than aggressive. Close up, Miranda seemed about 70, a bit stooped, but still tall and wiry in jeans and something he thought a gardener's magazine might call a smock. Gray hair scraped back under an old straw hat, and mouth pursed like she'd swallowed a lemon. She didn't invite him in, just stood there with the door barely ajar, and said nothing as the dog settled companionably around his feet. He introduced himself, and feeling certain any small talk would only bring on more disdain, he started straight in on the questions he'd been asking all afternoon. There's been a vandalism incident down at the point. We're checking to see if the neighbors heard or saw any strange activities last night. She crossed her arms and leaned against the lintel. It's a strange world. There's strange activities going on all the time. I meant at the wind farm site, he said patiently. Her pursed lips almost disappeared. Don't call that place a farm around me. It's going to be an industrial site, a wind factory. Anyway, I don't see why I would hear anything more than you. You're on the same road. So you're saying you didn't hear or see anyone? If you say so. He plowed doggedly on. Do you know of anybody who might bear a grudge against the project? You mean other than me, she drawled. Right at the moment, he had no difficulty imagining her as a saboteur hacking away with garden clippers at the wind spear fence. I signed a petition, she said dryly, and I haven't been attempting any sabotage, if that's what you mean. I heard about that dummy thing. It's just a prank, some children getting up to nonsense. It was a pretty ugly prank, he said. Did you hear the fence was cut up too? Her bony shoulders lifted in a shrug. So you support that kind of vandalism? What about you, she said. You support that bully Sousa and his tactics? Whose side are you on? I'm on the side of peace and order, aren't you? She tutted most of the time. But the briefest read of history will show that some of humankind's noblest thought has come from men and women who are breaking some law. He couldn't believe he was having this discussion with a possible suspect, but there was something about the woman, and he felt he had to answer. You're putting Andy Pultz on the same level as these? It's Tom Paine? By all accounts, he drove his wife and daughters from home years ago. She shook her head in irritation. Maybe he's not the champion some people might choose, but change is hard, and it isn't always right. I believe in free speech, too, Pete said, but the man's hardly been persecuted. He had his chance to object, lots of chances. She looked with her wintry gaze up the road towards the point. Well, I didn't hear anything last night, other than the wind, of course. Wind always talks strange. Adopting a mock dramatic tone, she quoted, "Ill blows the wind that profits nobody."
Thank you, Robin. Now we'll take a short break.